Hello everyone, welcome to HHE Podcast, what obviously stands for Halloween Horror Events, a podcast what's about horror events in Orlando, Florida, like Halloween Horror Nights and Halloween Screams, and we talk a lot about the UK ones as well, and there is a special UK episode coming out soon. But today, we're back in Orlando. Simon's very quiet, he will be back in a minute. I don't know where he's gone, but he will be back. And we're talking Halloween Horror Nights 32. We've got a food guru back on because we're talking about the food. And as we didn't try anything, we need the man, I think, might have tried it all. So we're welcoming back the master of food, Pastor John Self.
Welcome. Thanks, Phil. I'm not sure I deserve that lovely introduction, but yes, I tried everything the first weekend.
And I think that's quite impressive by me because I've got a bit of a cough right now. I go on holiday this weekend coming up and to Tenerife quickly for a quick stay in Tenerife. Great. And I've got a cough. I'm trying to get rid of it. And it's going to be about 28 degrees out there. So it's going to be lovely. I can see Simon is returning. So before we really get into this, can I just ask anyone on any podcast app you're using, please give us a great review and subscribe to us on your podcast app and share us to everyone out there. Thank you very much. Simon's back. Simon, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I've just been replaced by Tiff for a couple of minutes. But yeah, I'm fine, mate.
I noticed that. I was a little concerned.
Yeah, she's better looking.
It was better. So,
on YouTube, it'd look a lot better than seeing this ugly book. But
Well, we're not coming back to YouTube until next year, and changes afoot, as people know if you listened to the last episode. What I heavily edited, Simon, and we won't say what I edited 6 minutes out of.
Oh, is it?
No,
a certain name that shall not be mentioned again.
Yes, I went. John, I went on a very big rant about a certain musician, and I've decided it's not right for the podcast, so I took it out.
Okay,
it is now disappeared.
Anyway,
Tom, what are you drinking there, mate?
Brewdog Oktoberfest.
And John, where are you?
Oh, look
right
at
now?
You. You talking to me?
Yeah. Where are you right now?
I'm back in the condo in Kissimmee.
Very nice. So as I alluded to, let's get to it. We're talking HHM32. We're going to have a little bits what John's top three houses, worst three were, what he thought of the whole event. But the biggest part is the food. So John, alluded before Simon came back. You tried it all in the first weekend.
First weekend, we tried it all because I had some food blogs to crank out for that, had a Sunday deadline. So I had to try all of them. And then, of course, I didn't. As you can see, if you search for my name on the internet and then you find places, you'll see that my perspective changed as the event went on because some food got better and some food got worse. Just like houses get better and houses get worse. It's sort of the same thing.
Houses
that's actually quite interesting, that, because usually the food, it's either stays the same or they just get rid of it, don't they? But as long as they're improving food, if they made food worse, that's a bad thing. But as long as it sounds like they're actually improving the food.
Well, usually what we see at SeaWorld, Walt Disney World, and Universal is some of the food deteriorates after the first weekend because the executive chefs aren't standing over people. So you just expect that. Yeah. But some of the food, I just think, deteriorated because they were running out of supplies and moving things a different way. But some food was a lot better than after the first weekend.
Before we actually get in the food, maybe you can help us with this conundrum. How can Universal sort out this problem for super long lines for waiting for food? What is the fix, John? What do you reckon it is?
Well, I was very concerned, you know, when I got an idea of what they were going to try to do this year with the food. They didn't have enough food places open. They had less food places open this year than they did last year. And they went with the idea of, we're going to use more of our everyday food options. And I don't think it worked. Like, let's just take another example, that kiosk that they've kind of rethemed to be like a little mini Chinatown across from San Francisco Pastry Company that was right next to the Scare Zone in San Francisco.
Yeah, I know.
They tried using it, but how are you going to get in line?
Yeah.
And so that was a waste of time. Then San Francisco Pastry wasn't open on the other side, which is fine. I have a problem with that. There just wasn't enough spaces open.
So you reckon more spaces?
Yes, that's what I would do. I mean, you had using the Mardi Gras model. I understand Mardi Gras is way different than Halloween Horror Nights for lots of good reasons.
Yeah. Mardi Gras seems to have it down to a T, but they don't need. They've got the room as well because a lot of the food places.
That's correct.
There's no scare zones taking up the areas.
Right.
But what I've said it on our previous show that I found the food lines extremely busy, but the bar lines, which they seem to have had a few more this year.
Yes.
Was empty.
And they even added an extra one after about halfway through the second week. They added it. Just to letting you behind the scenes, there was the bar that was added on the bridge between London and Springfield.
Yes, because that was a bit of a dead zone, though, wasn't it?
Right. Originally, weeks, yeah. Before the tropical storm hurricane, I don't remember, that came through right before Halloween Horror Nights, that week before, they took that whole thing down and they rearranged where some of the food was. So right. that was supposed to be unofficially, that was supposed to be a food booth.
Yeah, because was it the corn dog last year? That crazy corn dog we brought out?
That was a little farther around the corner, but yeah, they had corn dog. They had the Korean corn dog there, but that was supposed to be a food booth. And they moved some of that stuff to the trailer that was over in Springfield.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Or near Springfield. Sorry, Universal would be upset if I said it was in Springfield. It's on the edge of Springfield.
Yeah, was that the area behind near Animal Actors where it was people used to do the sit down area.
But that was the food trailer across the pathway.
Can I just say I actually missed that sitting area because it was really good when it was raining.
Yes,
it was one of the few places what could keep you dry while you didn't want to be in lines and that, but you wanted to stay in the park.
Yeah, so
no, but I
good job.
Good, I'm sorry, Simon.
No, it's okay. Sorry.
Yeah, I agree. The first couple blogs I wrote about the food, I was like, I warned people it was going to be bad for the queues, and it was far worse than even I expected.
Okay, I think the other fix as well is they've got to have a couple of food booths, or maybe could be mobile ordering.
Well, didn't they experiment with that during Mardi Gras? Yeah, they did. That was a couple of years ago, and then they kind of got away from it.
Yeah, but that's when they were starting the mobile ordering. So I think they've got it more to a T. Like, isn't Minions basically a mobile ordering place now? So,
well, it's table delivery. So you don't want to get the food blogger started on that. It's a system that doesn't work very well at Universal. And you might want to get ready for it at Epic Universe, because every restaurant's going to be that way at Epic Universe.
I think Epic Universe is going the way of SeaWorld, and I think it's going to be cashless.
Well, that's possible. But that's... We'll see. We'll see what NBC Universal wants to do with that. But yeah, I agree, Simon. The food. I don't think the queues were worse than last year. It's just there were fewer options.
Well, it's just what I found. Like last year, I found the bars quite busy.
Were
as busy as they normally are. But the Friday and Saturday night, you couldn't get food because they were just queuing up at least a 35 to 40 minute queue for food.
Yes, I agree.
All the bars were empty, and then Sunday night, the final night when me and you got Express, the food booths were pretty empty and the bars were pretty full. So that just shows what demographic was actually in the parks on a Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. In my eyes, over the week, over the short weekend I went, that's what I noticed.
I think that's a small sampling, but I think that does match. Probably what happened.
By the way, can I just say Sunday nights, 18 and over, that's what it should be. No one younger. Let's make it the proper scary night.
We can wish.
That's a wish and a dream for you.
Yes, because what I understand by me, they're gonna rebrand it next year to HFN, Halloween Family Nights, because it certainly ain't horror anymore.
Well, it's got some horror, but if your argument is
the price
that that's fair. Actually, I've written a couple blogs about being horrified about the prices at Universal. When I can get the same quality of food now for less price over at Epcot than I can at Universal, that's not a good sign.
Oh, so Epcot's a little bit cheaper and better then this year.
Yeah, I used to consistently, that was my go-to when I'd go on podcasts like this was, you can get this, you can get bigger portions, maybe not the same quality of food, but bigger portions of Universal for less money. That's no longer true.
Right. I've not done Disney for a few years now, and the last one I went to was the Epcot, and I found the Food and Wine Festival was, you could get a decent meal out about $50 if you wanted to spread around and eat it.
Yes.
But the portion size was small, so obviously you did spend quite a bit more. But then when we went to Universal, you spend $30 and you're full. That's what I found. But obviously now it's kind of like this year, I did notice the price rises at Universal are very expensive.
John, yes. I've got a question for you out there. The quick one. We'll go back to different properties. This is a bit of a segue for me. Is there a like theme park food podcast out there?
There are lots of theme park food podcasts.
I've never found them.
They tend to focus on, well, you might want to Google podcast John Self Goes On. There's a lot of, I don't know what you would get. Sorry, I'm not that famous. But there's a lot of Disney just focus on food podcasts.
John, mate, I've got a new thing for you, mate. Theme park foodie, John Self. Before Craig steals the idea.
Well, theme park foodie is already, not that I would know this, we can talk about this off camera, or I'm not actually on camera, off podcast later, but as you well know, I may be partnering with a new organization that may be involved in food in the theme parks in Orlando here pretty soon.
Very good. Right, should we now get actually into what the subject is before we get into houses now?
Yep.
John, you can lead us. You can lead us a bit here, mate. Let's talk about your favorite foods and then slowly get into the foods you think just ain't worth it.
Well, this one's pretty consistent. I went back and checked all the articles that I wrote and all the ones that, whether they had my name or don't have my name, spoiler, sometimes I get paid for other people's credit. To keep it simple, I'm just going to run down the list. I'm looking at my screen is, though I still can't believe this, the sour apple pie funnel fries were really good. They came with, you know, sour apple was the big thing this year at every theme park. And Universal pulled it off with the sour apple ice cream and the streusel. It was a good thing. I mean, it was still $10, but you still got your annual pass discount. It was pretty good. You guys didn't try anything, did you?
No, I didn't have anything at all. It was a matter of getting around the houses, getting as much alcohol in into my system to cope with the queues.
This was basically the logical progression from the petrified rat tails from last year, where they had like the crab on top of the funnel fries, which was a great idea, but a lot of people didn't like it. This was, they just committed to something sweet.
Yeah.
Probably. The weirdest thing that was good was the left behind ravioli in the Sting Alley area with the left behind with the Last of Us theme. And it's nothing special. The ingredients are basic, you know, basic marinara. They did add some truffle cream, you know, a little garlic toast and some mushrooms, but it works pretty well. They're about $10. And if you washed it out, you got a souvenir for a Fedra ration can, which we know how much those are worth. Because we can go to Green Eggs and Ham over at Islands of Adventure.
Yeah.
And we know those are worth $5. So when you do the math, if you wanted a cheap souvenir, that was a pretty easy way to get one.
Yeah. So like you said, not basic ingredients, but done well. Which is the basis of good food. As long as you cook it and make it well, anything can be good, comes it so.
Right. I that's a really good call there, because I forget to go with the standard food blogger statement of, you know, it can be food that you make at home, but they prepare it properly and they use the right ingredients and the mix works. And I've written this many times, this ravioli should not have tasted as good as it did.
That's good to know.
Based on the sum of ingredients. Let me just run down the list a little more. The cordyceps corn dog, which is basically the logical evolution of the Korean corn dog from last year, except this year Universal themed it for The Last of Us and added some truffle cream sauce. And it actually worked really well. I was surprised that it tasted so good. It was a little pricey. It was about $11.50, but it wasn't outrageous for what it was. Because I know from walking through the outlet mall, because there's now if you go in the food court at the outlet mall that's nearest to Walt Disney World, there's a whole stand there that serves Korean corn dogs. And so these really didn't cost that much more than those Korean corn dogs did.
Like I said, here in the UK, corn dogs are not really a thing.
That's correct, right?
Don't get me wrong, they are nice. I think it is down to the actual breading that the corn is made in. It's like it's like a corn batter, isn't it? It's not the same as what the UK would usually have. If we were going to batter something, we batter it in plain batter or beer batter.
Yes.
And would it be like a cakey kind of texture? It doesn't come well over here in America, in the UK, but...
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's always the big discussion if you try to explain hot dogs to different cultures.
And obviously, our hot dogs are terrible compared to... so
I think terrible is too harsh, but on a scale of 1 to 10, they're no higher than a 3. Yes, I agree. They're not good.
I think 3 is generous for the UK's hot dogs, I'm telling you.
Well, I do need to be fair that my hot dog sampling, based on my background, may have had that place where they swing rackets and they have green grass to play on. So I maybe was getting a higher quality of hot dog. Yes, exactly. So we're clear. The other things that are probably noticeable in the food, and I think some of these are going to come back in some form, but this is kind of a pattern you can see in the future. They did the vegan burn-in poutine, which I thought the vegan version was better than the non-vegan version.
Right, okay. So, over that, they probably just use vegan cheese rather than...
Yes.
Yeah.
And I thought it worked pretty well, even though Universal has an annoying habit of creating this incredible vegan item and then adding real cheese. They do it all the time, and I'm like, come on, guys.
Oh, yeah. Was it the chicken burger that they did last year or something?
They've done that before. They do it at Today Cafe. Yeah. They do it at lots of different places, because I was going through the menus the other day and I was like, are you serious? I've had this item. It's really good and it doesn't need the cheese, but you do that anyway. I want to give Universal credit. We picked on them for value, so I want to be fair about this. The vegan walking taco. The vegan walking taco was gigantic compared to the SeaWorld version.
Yeah,
but same price.
Would that not be a sponsor thing? Would it be Fritos, do you think?
That's what I thought, but they both use the same thing.
Oh, okay.
But when we had it at SeaWorld for the Beer Fest, which was just another, I think it was beer, whatever they call it at SeaWorld, right before that. I mean, it was a tiny, you know, those tiny snack bags that you get a whole box of for kids. The only criticism of the vegan walking taco, and the non-vegan was pretty good too, is it probably has too many chips for the toppings that go with it. Mm. But if that's the best criticism you can have for an item for about $10 that could actually be a meal at HHN, you need to look for some better criticisms, because that one's pretty easy. And I guess the last thing, this is the example of something that got way, way better as the event went on. Over at the, why am I blanking on it? The Stellar Bar across from Minion Cafe, themed as Stranger Things. Yeah. The Cheddar Jalapeno Hellfire Club sandwich. Opening weekend and the first week, or the first week after that, this was just kind of an average sandwich. It's shaved pork shoulder with crispy potato sticks, spicy mayo, pineapple chutney, and jalapeno cheddar bread. When we did another tour of the food about 3 weeks in, this was the number one item.
Okay.
Of everything. And so
I actually completely forgot that food booth was there, because even though it was on the front, it kind of got hidden away because it was.
That's correct. It's kind of behind Dr. Oddfellows, or beside Dr. Oddfellows, and hidden there a little bit. I get it. The lines were not really very long for that one often compared to the other ones.
Like I said, I do wish I actually tried more food this year, but it was just one of those things. When I was only there for the weekend, it just that
right.
was one of the last things on my mind.
Yeah, you're not there for 24 nights like me.
No. I might be there for 10 next year, maybe.
Okay.
11. There for a few more next year.
Yeah. In fairness, there really were not any. There was a lot of average food, or slightly above average food, for HHN. There wasn't a lot of bad food, except...
Oh, there we go.
I'll go with the easy one first. Dr. Oddfellow's Carn Evil Dog, which was the red hot dog with the confetti hot dog bun, which wasn't a confetti hot dog bun. Kool-Aid pickles, which didn't taste like Kool-Aid pickles. Bubblegum mustard, which kind of tasted like bubblegum. And potato sticks.
That just sounds disgusting.
That was my concern. But if you got all those things to come together correctly, it was okay. The problem was your chances of that happening were, you know, the same as were very, very, very small.
It comes to something when you say if you, your chances of getting it all right is okay. It's obviously that's an item that needed to be changed or removed.
But that's a standard universal pro and con. They create these incredible creative items.
But it's talking about it did look good for the Instagrams.
Oh, it looked great for my photos. It looked great for the photos. Yeah. But
I think that they need to look at that again and go, look, right, let's make something look good, but let's also make it taste good as well.
Right.
I've got to ask. Surfer Boy Pizza. It looked like a school pizza to me. Did it stay as a school pizza?
It was not a school pizza, but it's not going to fall on either one of these lists of best and worst. So it was kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
We got it several times, and depending on who your target audience is, because the vegan one was pretty good, the standard one was pretty good. I mean, it's kind of the French bread crust. That's what we call it here in the US. I know it's different in the UK, but it's kind of a thick, softer crust.
Yeah, we kind of call it like a flatbread pizza, no more than anything.
Yeah. Whereas we define that as something way different here in the US. But the Carnival was, it just wasn't good. I just have a better, that was really the only bad thing. The next one that I have criticized every single time was the peanut butter burger, which sounded awesome when they described it with the meat and the jalapenos and the peanut sauce and all these things. And it actually tasted pretty good, but you get like a slider sized burger for $13.50.
Yeah. I was just about to say that when I didn't actually see, I saw it being made when I ordered a drink at the bar opposite Mel's. And I saw them making them, and them buns look small.
They were small.
Even for the UK, that looked like the size of a McMuffin, and our McMuffins are tiny over here in the UK.
It was bigger than your McMuffins, but not much. Depending on who you are, it was about 5 bites and you're done.
Yeah, it was. I was watching them making them to the left hand side, and they did look nice.
Yes,
when I did saw that, when I did exactly what you just said. Then I saw the price at $13.49. I thought that's not worth that. Probably $8 at the most as a sample size.
That's $13.49 without sides. It didn't come with the chips like the garlic cheesesteak did last year. It didn't come with fries. It didn't come with anything. So you're spending $13.50 just to get this burger. And just for the record, this is a general rule. Anything that comes out of Mel's until they fix that kitchen is going to taste bad. You could order just a generic cheeseburger, which we did there. It was about $12. It was even worse.
Yeah, well, I've never actually eaten at Mel's in all the years I've been going. I've had a milkshake from there. I did like the milkshake. I was recommended to get it from there. But I was told when I first went from a few people who've been before and said that, if you want a burger, go to Richter Burger. Don't go to Mel's.
I would not go to either one.
No, well, it's your first year being there. My first year going. Yeah. I'm talking about that 2008, 2009, the first year going.
Right.
I don't think I had a theme park burger. The last burger I had was the Impossible Burger at SeaWorld a couple of years ago.
That's not bad.
Yeah, that was a nice burger. I actually did enjoy that. Wish it was bigger because it was running sample size.
Right. But to sidetrack us here, if you're insisting on getting a burger inside the theme parks, you need to go to Wimpy's over at Island Adventure at Toon Lagoon.
Yeah. Well, if it's open. It's very, really open.
It's always open now. It's been open for the last 2 or 3 years, almost all the time. The last thing on this, on the worst food, is just a clue you should get. I got this a couple times. Some people loved it, but I never did. It was the Yuri's favorite at the Surfer Boy Pizza location. It's supposed to be chocolate cake with peanut butter, mousse, and Reese's Pieces. And the problem is it's pre-made in a nice, pretty container. So you could get a good one or a bad one and not have any way to tell.
Yeah.
And it's not a good use of your money when you can't tell if you're basically playing the lottery to get on food.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
That's the thing. But sometimes with these mass-produced stuff, it would be a lot cheaper for them to bring it, just have it shipped in. I can't forgive them for it, but I can see why they've done it.
John, let's end this segment with this question here. It's quite of a winded question together here. Do you think the food items were overpriced or fair? What do you think the quality of the food this year compared to last year? And how do you think they can improve it next year?
I did feel the food was noticeably higher. But some of the food was still reasonably priced. You've talked to me before. I tend to value the price of the food more than most food bloggers. Most food bloggers, it's like, does it taste good or does it not? I tend to go, I don't care if it tastes good if I paid three times more for it than I did for something that wasn't quite as good. It's HHN, so you need something. You need unique items. I was kind of disappointed in some of the items were a little more generic than they need to be. But then the problem is, this is the universal dilemma. When they try to do creative food, people don't buy it. Because most people who go to HHN just need, they want chicken tenders and fries and burgers.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a dilemma. The only thing I can see that they could do is they just need more options. And for some reason, some of it is space, some of it is other things. And if we believe all the rumors out there, that may get worse next year. But because they're going to have so little space to work with, they just need more options. Even if it's what they do for Mardi Gras and HHN, where they have two Twisted Tater booths, just have two or three of the same thing in different places.
Phil mentioned this. Phil mentioned this on a previous one of our episodes. I imagine me and him talking. Would you say having the food booths open during the day would help with actually quality and people actually trying the food more?
I would have said yes to that. But last year, they experimented with having about half the food booths open during the day, or at least in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And it did not go well.
Right.
And so I don't know, because that would have been my suggestion.
But was it advertised last year? I don't remember.
It was
being
not. That would be the counter argument.
There's a problem. Like with Mardi Gras, you know the food booths are open all the way through Mardi Gras. And it's advertised as the food booths are open.
Right. What I would do, and this is very food blogger and I'm spending Universal's money, is I would have a booth open. I have one or two booths open during the day, like start at noon. Oh, go ahead.
My answer is, you know where they do that Christmas thing on City Walk outside NBC Sports Bar and Grill on the lake area when they did
that? They did that 2 years ago.
Yeah. Why don't they do that for Halloween Horror Nights with food booths? Because that might get more people interested in the event as well. But the people who don't want to go to the event but want to try the food, they have an option in City Walk. Surely that's going to make more money from.
I would have gone with that one also. I know I keep shooting things down, but these are all theories that I've suggested. But the experiment with food booths for Mardi Gras didn't go very well. Because remember, they had
for Mardi Gras.
I'm not arguing that point whatsoever.
But the problem with Mardi Gras is it's a freebie, so people don't care. If they've got a park ticket, they're going to be in the park. But Halloween Horror Nights being a
fair,
extra payable event, that's why that would make it useful for me.
Yeah, yeah. I think it comes down to a payroll issue, but I think there's based on that explanation, there's more logic to it. Yeah.
Okay, and just as we finish this quickly off here, compared to last year's food options and taste and everything, who's better, 33 or 32?
Well, 32
good. Items were better. The top items were better last year, but there were more stinkers last year too. So there were more options where you wouldn't get a really bad thing. Like nothing we've talked about except for the carnival dog was really bad. Overpriced, yes, but really bad. Whereas, as I'm doing it from my memory in my head, there were like four things last year that were not good. I mean, just not good at all. But there were three or four things that were way better than this stuff this year. So it's kind of that conversation you've had about HHN houses historically of do you want two that are really awesome and three that are really bad, or do you want them more even?
So in summary, you would say it's improved but also gone down on both years.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Right.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's right, a good way to get, end on a bit.
Yeah, and we'll be back in a minute when we're going to talk his favourite three houses and worst three and what he thought of the event. So see you in a second, guys. Come back, people. We're on part two now, and we're going to be talking John's basically what he thought of HHM32. So, Simon, do you got any questions for him?
I know this is an obvious question, and you probably hear it all the time, but did anything evolve that dramatically that it changed your opinion on the event? So, you know, either one of the houses completely changed, or was it just steady changes through the course of the event?
I would say it was probably steady changes. I know this got a lot of traffic in the vlogosphere, in the news bites, we call it, but they really tried to update the audio cues or the audio triggers in the houses that went along, and those got better. And you went opening weekend.
It was a week after.
Okay. The opening weekend for media night, which is opening weekend, opening night, the houses were more lit up. Mm. And then for the Saturday and Sunday after that, they were so dark. I literally was crashing into things, and I was not the only one.
Yeah,
because I had to adjust that.
Very similar to the Walking Dead house a few years ago.
Yeah, that's fair.
I went in opening. I actually did go in opening night, and the water scene, you couldn't see anything. Yeah. But then we went through on, I think it was the Saturday night or the Sunday night, you could see that person in the water, and it just took you completely out of the house. That's
right.
Why it got slated so much. So yeah, I do know things evolve, and usually for the better. So
some of the scare zones got better, but the problem is they were already starting way too low, in my opinion.
Right. Okay. So let's go from that. What would you try to do? Your top three, worst three, or have you got a ranking system, or have you got?
I kind of do, as long as I want to put this disclaimer out before that, because it doesn't fall into that category. The scariest house was the Exorcist Believer.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
But even after seeing the movie, that house is still missing something. Okay. I mean, it's good.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm complaining about a house that's probably on a scale of 1 to 10, probably a 7. So it's not bad. It's just the plot's a little missing. But I don't know. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. But it was clearly the scariest. Back to Phil's point, which I think is valid, that at least this year, building on the trend from last year, we're seeing less pure horror scares in the houses than we did historically. Mm.
Yeah, because I had my trepidations about the Exorcist house with it being a, doing air quotes, preview house.
Right.
And they historically have never worked.
Nope.
I believe, as a concept, the house was good. But from what people are saying from watching the film and what now going through the house, it still doesn't feel like a representation of the film. So
no, it does not.
Exactly. And, so that's what I mean. That's what I'm saying. When a preview house, it could have looked like what the plans were when they started to build the house, but then obviously script changes and cash changes and other things happen inside of the film itself in editing.
Right.
That is completely changed the story. It's like, what's called Crimson Peak is a prime example.
Uh-huh.
I remember going through that house, didn't have a clue what was going on, and I do remember the house quite well, and then watched the film, and it did nothing to the film. It didn't even represent the film in my eyes. And that's what I felt with Exorcist Believer. And that's the reason, one of the reasons why it was at the bottom of my hype list. It ended up being at the bottom of my list of the top 10 as well, or near towards
That was one of the big things that they talked around about at Blumfest, because we had the Blumfest event at Universal. And they talked about, you know, making changes to the houses as the house as they were making the movie. And they were getting still photos from the movie and they were trying to build upon that. And I think they did a really good job based upon that. And then they just kind of drifted at the end, but I don't want to. But for an Exorcist house, which I know is a very low standard, it was pretty good.
Okay.
For an Exorcist house. But it had more plot to work with. But I would say, you want to start with best or worst?
What would be, let's get the bad stuff out of the way. Your worst house for the year, in your opinion. And people listening, this is John's opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. And if it's Chucky, I'm never going to speak to him again.
Right. Well, let's get this right. If it's not Chucky, John, you should be stopped blogging.
Okay, just for the record, just so we're clear, in every article I've written that lists the worst houses, Chucky does make the list.
Oh, I know.
But my issue is...
Not in Hollywood, though.
Hollywood. That's my concern is the, all my friends who went to the Chucky house in Hollywood, the one in Orlando, they just couldn't believe it. That's a trend this year, is the actual production, the actual effects of the houses in Hollywood, Stranger Things, Last of Us, Chucky, seem a lot better than they were in Orlando. I'm not saying they're better houses, just the way they produce them.
To me, it feels like they've still got the original creative team on the job. Mr. Murdy, and then in the Florida, it's kind of still a new team trying to get the feet. So
I would, based on all of my run-throughs, and I was kind of going through this when Phil messaged me about this, and I'm probably going to throw one in you're not going to expect. The two at the bottom for me are Chucky and Dr. Oddfellow's Twisted Origins. I had so many bad runs in Dr. Oddfellow's house.
I didn't like Dr. Oddfellow, so you're not on your own on that. It just wasn't connecting with me at all, that house. I thought the character was a very clever character, but it just didn't connect for some reason.
Yeah, I would go through and there would be nobody in a spot, and I would do this, and I'm like, I probably went to the house about 10 times.
Yeah.
And so...
See, that's another drawback to actually going through the houses multiple times. If you get a great run through and you get everything, and then you go through again and it's terrible, you can compare it. When you only go through a house once, which, to be honest, I actually only went through... I think we went through all houses once, maybe a couple of them went through twice. It felt a bit better because I weren't able to repeat myself. So if I had a bad run. And that's the main reason why The Darkest Deal was at the bottom of my list.
Funny you should mention that, because I had some awesome runs in Darkest Deal, but I had about seven runs in Darkest Deal.
John, yeah. We didn't.
I know. We had a good one.
I don't think it was that good because I was stuck still for too long.
Well, but at least we got to see stuff.
Yeah. I think the best part was when the scare actor started talking to you.
Yes, exactly. It's like, there was a whole conversation of him trying to tell me who he was and how and who he knew me from, and I couldn't tell in the costume who he was, and I was like, okay. So, but those are if I were picking the bottom three, and those would not be the same bottom three after the first weekend, and those would not be the same bottom three after the first 2 weeks. But overall, for me, those are the bottom three. Because ironically...
Right, just to clarify, what are the bottom three again?
Dr. Oddfellow's Twisted Origins, The Darkest Deal, and Chucky.
So he's upset two of the hosts on the show.
That's correct.
Why?
Me and Joe.
Oh, right, so I'm not upset.
No, Joe was obsessed with The Darkest Deal.
Well, Joe should have gone to the event then, shouldn't he?
If you had a good run through Darkest Deal, I could argue, I don't think I believe it, but I could argue it's a top two house.
Yeah, I can see it. Like I said, I could see the scares that was going on. But if you missed that opening
segment,
you had no idea what's going on. Even if you read the backstory, you can kind of know what's going on, but then you don't see what's happening all the way through the house. Like I said, the houses are a transition to a story. And if you miss the opening credits or the opening sequence, you've lost the whole story. And that's the only thing that fell short on me was the opening sequence. And then obviously everything else just didn't work because I didn't know what was going on.
Well,
I knew a little bit more than what Julie did. Because obviously Julie doesn't do this and I do the podcast, so we knew the origin of it. So I kind of understood, but I'm like, I've lost the first bit of it, and that's what's brought it down for me. It's interesting it has been spanning around as one of the best houses for some people. So
correct,
it's everyone's entitled to their opinions.
Well, I think house wise, it's a strong year though. There was a lot of people different ones. It's a good year for houses.
Yeah, on opening weekend, the scare actors, the team, the house attendants, they all did a great job of setting the theme for what you were going to do. As we were walking through on opening weekend, we kept getting asked, are you ready to sell your soul? Are you ready to sell your soul? Mm. And it kind of set the theme, even though that's a kind of a cheap gimmick, at least you knew what you were in for. So even if somehow you missed that first thing, you had a clue what was going on. And they stopped doing that after opening weekend. I'm not sure why.
Maybe bored. Laryngitis.
Maybe.
But, so, let's move on to the more positive stuff. Your top houses. I won't say, we said top three, but yeah, your top houses from the event for this year.
And I'm just looking at these as I wrote them down, and a couple of these can easily be criticized in my choices, and I'll even criticize it. The Last of Us, but remember, I'm a huge fan of the game, the show, and got to see what I wanted to see. Yes, I'd have rather been in Hollywood because they did a better job with it in Hollywood. But the scenes, if they had added a little bit more of the scenes to The Last of Us, it could have been the Pretty House this year. Mm-hmm. And so, because they did a really good job with so much stuff, they just kind of threw us into a weird part of the plot. And so, but yeah. I thought it was really good. And if you were a Last of Us fan, you would walk out of there, except for the part where the bloaters show up in the wrong place. But you got to have a little suspension of disbelief. Let that go. It was fine. Though I'm not sure that it's House of the Year. I did enjoy Yeti Campground Kills far more as the event went on.
It was a good house. It wasn't House of the Year.
That was going to be my question at the end. That did you agree with it or not? But obviously, you've answered.
I'm struggling with what I would put in its place.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a consensus thing. I heard you, Phil. So don't worry. I don't. It's written up here. For me, I would have Universal Monsters Unmasked next. But that's because I had phenomenal runs almost every single time.
And you got to do especially, that once.
Yeah, especially using Express. The timing was just perfect. I really didn't wait that long for Universal Monsters. I know we've heard people say that. I'm like, I don't mean to pull out working for some sites that plan tours and time waits, but there was never a really long wait for Universal Monsters for Express. It was never more than 15 minutes.
I think I think that's one of the houses where the operations actually worked well. The team that they had knew how to pulse people through with the express and the regular queue to keep it flowing. Because which house was it that we went into? Our first one. Oh, it was actually the Last of Us.
That one struggled.
That was terrible. That whoever was doing the operations for that. We were in Express. Yeah, it was I think it was a 90-minute queue for The Last of Us, and we waited for nearly 45 minutes with Express.
Right.
I understand that's happened quite a lot, but that's like first time it's actually happened to me. And when you've only got an 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock Express, it felt like I should have just gone and just skipped that one completely. But
yeah, I get that. That house, that section, because that was where the weekend was last year, that something about the way that's designed and set up, it struggles with pulsing the balancing the two different queues.
In that area, it's great that they lifted the floor so you're not still in muddy puddles and all that.
That's now. Correct. And of course, all rumors lead to they're going to solve more of that next year. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see. I've heard the rumors. Well, it just irrigates actually, no, having that floor would still work. But if they are going to do what they're going to do with the tents, it makes sense, but they'll have to lift it up off the ground because the water table is a bit too low. Anyway.
Yeah, even though Universal Monsters Unmasked has some serious plot issues, that it doesn't make sense why you need all four of those monsters.
Yeah.
Some of the effects were great. And most of the time that I went through, except for one time out of the 12 or 13 times I went through, I got almost all of the big scenes. The event's over. I can say this now. The bungee scene, the triple scare, all those kind of setups. And they did fix some audio too.
Yeah, that was the unfortunate thing with the Universal Monsters. I knew the bungee scene was there because I spoiled myself by reading about it before I went on it. And I actually caught the actor harnessing himself in. So it kind of threw me out a little bit, but I still enjoyed the rest of the house. The rest of the scares were bang on. But I just kind of, as a cast change, it just kind of, you could just see him clipping himself in. And I'm like, I didn't want to see that. But that happens.
That happens. And honorable mention, you've got to go with Blood Moon Dark Offerings because it was an example. It's a relatively easy plot to explain. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't get it, it's still going to be fine.
That's beautiful as well.
Right. I called it an ABC house for HHN. They took the things they do well and they put them all in this house. Mm-hmm. They put some nice scenery in. They went with the, we'll call it the mannequins, fake mannequin trick where, you know, because they think they do that twice in that house where you're walking through thinking it's mannequins, but then one of the scare actors jumps out at you. Mm-hmm. Some of the standard trigger jump scares, very relatively easy audio, but audio that worked well. I think I did say
it was a very pretty house.
Yes.
It was nowhere near on top of my hype list. And like I said, it turned out to be the, what was that one from last year?
What were we thinking about the boat one?
The Wharf. Yeah.
Yep.
Headman's Wharf for the last year, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's a really high standard, though, to be the pretty house compared to that one.
But it gave it a good job.
I agree.
It's going to be difficult to actually, like I said, that Headman's Wharf is going to be very difficult to actually plan as well, because from all aspects it works. So they're your top ones. Should we talk about the zones or?
Let's get to them very quickly.
Ugh. Yeah, the only thing I wanted to interject was after the first full week and opening weekend, Stranger Things was in my top three.
Oh, okay.
But as I started to experience it more, it really lost its luster and it wasn't working quite as well.
What do you mean? You couldn't take 5 foot Vecna seriously?
Well, I did not have a problem with that.
Oh, I did. Vecna should be larger than life.
I know.
The problem I had with that Stranger Things house was seeing Vecna twice in the same eye line. That kind of took me out of it quite a few times.
I think there was too much Vecna in the house, full stop.
That's what I mean. You had like five Vecnas one after another, and there was one behind behind a sheet.
Yeah, there was the guy was Vecnas.
Yeah, so there was one guy, one strapped up. I think it was just a mannequin. And then you had one literally stirk coming out of a sheet just in front of you.
I want to say something.
In your own eye line here. That doesn't work.
I do want to say something, though. Apart from the blanket scenes, what I call them, the curtains areas, the other areas, they were stunning looking. Again,
that's correct.
You felt like you were in the actual TV show.
Yeah, they're better than season two. Better than Stranger Things 2. I'd say.
Yeah. Nothing beats number one. Number one was brilliant.
Right. That's kind of a low standard, though, Simon. Stranger Things 2 wasn't very good. Okay.
We have to give it a shout out now and then.
Should we get to the selfie zones?
I think you've expressed how you felt on this podcast several times about the scare zones. And I don't necessarily disagree with you this year. I have in the past. My concern is the Universal Creative HHN team design these five zones to be kind of a story among all into itself, but you have to know the story, and then it's set up where they're retconning Oddfellow. I mean, this one stressed me a lot. We've retconned Oddfellow's abilities and where he got everything from to make it fit for this event, to grab other things we've used elsewhere. And granted, they did kind of tinker with Jungle of Doom and made it better, but it's confusing. Where does Dr. Oddfellow's power come from? The Jungle of Doom thing? The Zodiac? What is it coming from? Where does it start from?
It's conflicting stories in the storyline.
Yes.
And if you picked up on it early enough, you could try and forget about it. But if you just went to the event and you were seeing Oddfellow at the beginning where he's giving you, I am lawless, I call it his car sale pitch. That's what it felt like. And then you go into the next zone. You think, well, where's this bit come from? And then, you can see where he's added his powers up, but you see him fully done at the beginning, and then you're going backwards. To me, it didn't work.
But I don't think it worked. I don't think it worked at all, because where do you start? Do you start at Jungle of Doom? Do you start at Zodiac? You can't start with Dr. Oddfellow when you first come in.
Yeah, but that's how I say it. You see the developed Oddfellow as you walk in, then you go into the Zodiac zone, where it's back in the beginning. Then you go into the jungle zone, which is the 1930s, was it?
But to be truthful, it was a good idea.
Oh, it was a great idea.
Maybe too much. I think we could have had a zone that was nothing to do with Oddfellow.
I've got a question for you. If them zones were condensed into a house, for each timeline, would that have worked better? I personally think it might have done.
I think it would have, because I wasn't a fan of the circus thing, because I know people love circuses, but to me, a circus house is a circus house. There's not much you can do with a circus house anymore.
And with all due respect, everybody had a circus house this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone does. So, even Skur City, the one I'm going but they don't care about, because it's actually in an old abandoned theme park where the you know, like Springfield, where they've got the toy, the games. It's in that section, and the clouds are attacking you everywhere. It's great. Oh, you should watch my video.
I realized this to feed into Phil's mantra here. Yeah, the scare zones became places to take photos. And the tricky part is, are we, and I'm asking, I don't know the answer to this, are we trying to use the scare zones to get people warmed up that are not used to HHN, because we're trying to reach a more family-friendly group to prepare them for the houses? Why?
But that's why they're congested as well, because they've become selfie zones. So everyone's standing around. So you're not enjoying, and the scare actors can't be enjoying it themselves. They're there to interact with you, do some scares, walk around. It's an art form, and it's not acting like that. I mean, I want to go in there. I don't mind slow walking, but and every once in a while, I don't mind people go to the side and stand around. But when they're standing in the middle, just standing in front of everything, you can't see anything going on. I think it spoils the whole thing for me.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the houses overall, I don't think I said this earlier, overall, I think were a step up in many, many cases. But the scare zones were three steps back this year. But I'm not sure what else they would have done with that theme.
Yeah,
I think next year they need 11 houses, and they need an extra scare zone somewhere. Do you remember the Killer Clowns one, scare zone?
Yeah.
Can we just not ban sell? Can we? Yeah, but you can sort of still move down that area, but because you don't need the whole space. But can we just ban selfies and that in the scare zones, and just have a stand where there's different scare actors standing there, and that's where you can get your selfies done with them?
Well, they had that with Altars of Horror a few years ago. Each house and each scare zone had its own representatives and scare actors at the beginning to take the selfies, but then they went round and still took selfies in the zones anyway.
Yeah, but that then takes that's for the staff then to make sure this doesn't happen, and the scare actors to basically just walk past. Don't stop for them. I'm sorry, it's the only way you can do it. You've got to be a bit rude to make it work. I mean, people should, you warn enough on the adverts beforehand, the commercials, social media and all that. If people listen to podcasts, we are not having scare zones or selfies. The actors will not be stopping for you this year.
I think it's gone past that point now. I think it's got too far.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would go that rigid, but I don't think you can go back. Pandora's box has been opened.
Yeah.
I have seen many films when Pandora's box has been closed.
Sorry. You forget who you're talking to. Much of my worldview is affected by Greco-Roman thought. Pandora's box cannot be closed.
Hellraiser. Okay, so pretty much so as an event, you loved it. Give a score out of 10, the whole event.
Now you stumped him.
7.5.
That's a fair number.
That's a good number. That's good.
I thought the houses were 8 to 8.5.
That's very fair.
Mm. Yeah, I think we ended with a 6.5, didn't we?
Because of the selfie zones. So, John, you'll be there next year, won't you?
That is the plan. Sorry, for those of you unaware, I am currently a freelance blogger, so who knows what I'm doing.
I just
flew back from Philadelphia literally this morning.
That's a good segue. Would you like to advertise some of your blogs, people that you work for? As we speak, obviously, it's going to be changing in the future, as we know there's a new secret
one
coming.
Yes, it is. Well, we'll get back to that. I will keep the ones that we're pretty sure will stay. And for HHN type content, I've written a lot for piratesandprincesses.net, some for Attractions Magazine, some for Thrills, Taste, Travels. I think that's pretty much all the HHN content that I'm the byline for. Now I've compiled the information for other larger sites that that might be cultural or might be what's up or something like that. You can figure out who it is later. But I run a lot of the stuff for that. I would expect in the future, there'll be conversations about a new dining site that I should be getting business cards and able to announce here pretty soon.
Fantastic, mate. Is there any social would you like anybody to follow you on?
It's easiest to follow me at on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, at Pastor John Self. And it's John, J-O-N, because H's are O.
I love when he says that. I love it. H's are O.
H's are O. Are O.
So. Simon, do you want to take us out, mate?
Yeah. Thank you all for listening. Can you do us a favor and share this with one friend? Just one. One friend is a good friend. Also, give us a 5-star review on your podcast app of choice. Also, follow us on all our socials at HHEPod. I think that's Instagram, X, Facebook, TikTok. We don't use TikTok, but we said we're
got it.
Yeah, just do that for us, guys. And if whatever platform you do listen onto, Spotify, iTunes, Google, if Google's still going,
not much longer.
Yeah, I know. Just a review and a follow would be fantastic. And if you do want to follow us on YouTube, also get over onto YouTube, HHE Podcast, because these will be video podcasts and they will be vlogs.
From next season. Yeah, from next season. We have left the video podcast for now. We are, as I've alluded before in the last episode, we're doing a soft reboot.
Yeah, I've done one for Skur City from last year, and I've also done a little mini blog from this year. That's on the channel. So go and give the guys over in Chorley a bit of love, because it's turning into my favourite event of the year at the moment. So I'm going to go back this Friday.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and hanging out with us again. From me, be epic. John, do you want to say anything before Simon uses his new line?
My standard line is, as always, eat like you mean it.
Love that. And Simon?
I've actually forgot it.
I should know it, because I was listening to it earlier while editing.
Oh, shit, what was it?
Oh, Simon!
I'm terrible. I know.
It's not Stay Spooky anymore.
You made Simon change it, so...
Yeah,
no, we didn't. We like Stay Spooky. No, he's the one who changed it.
You kind of shamed him into changing it.
I don't know what you mean, making everyone say it and taking the mickey.
I can get the gist of it, but the moment I'll just say Spooky, because I can't remember what it is now.
He's going to save it for next year's show. There we go. Thank you very much, everyone.
I just remembered.
And on that bombshell, go on.
Let the scourge commence.